The following program is a presentation of Grand Slam Ministries.
It is that time again. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 62 of the Dan Scott Show. It is great to have you with us. I am Dan. We are presented each and every week by our 501c3 nonprofit organization, Grand Slam Ministries. Hope that you've had a great week. If so, we will try not to do anything to mess it up. If not, maybe we can provide you with a little bit of a lift, and we will try, by the time this thing is done, to learn something we did not know, and that always starts here in the captain's chair. No surprise, but I think we've got a good show for you today. We will close the show with an interview with a guy named Josh Holland, who is the international director of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. They are the ones that send chaplains into areas where there have been national disasters or school shootings or whatever the case may be, to go in and minister to people. That's coming up in the second half of the show. In the opening segment of the show, however, after the next break, we will talk with Abby Johnson. You may remember her from the movie Unplanned. Abby worked for Planned Parenthood, in fact, ran a Planned Parenthood center, had a couple of abortions of her own, and then Jesus got hold of her life, has brought her out of that aspect of life, has her now working to bring people out of the abortion workers industry. And through her foundation and organization, And Then There Were None, they have brought almost 700 people out of that industry. It's a phenomenal story. You're going to hear Abby's story and her mission when we come back, and then Josh Holland in the second half of the show. But as always, before we get going, a word about Grand Slam Ministries. Teenage boys and young men today are in crisis. Statistics show that a home without a father or male role model present is the single biggest indicator of poverty, behavior issues, drug and alcohol abuse, criminal activity, and yes, imprisonment. At Grand Slam Ministries, one of our core missions is developing a mentorship program to teach boys how to become strong Christian men, and then teach those men to be the biblical husbands, fathers, and church and community leaders the Bible calls us to be. We need your prayers, we need your ideas, and we need your support. Visit our website, GrandSlamMinistries.org, to find out more about our mentorship mission and prayerfully consider how you may be able to assist us. Again, that website is GrandSlamMinistries.org.
Want to see a listing of our affiliates, check out videos, or listen to past shows and explore our archives? It's all available at our website, danscottshow.org. And now, back to the show.
Episode 62 of the Dan Scott Show. So glad that you could join us this weekend. Show airs on radio stations around the country and a couple of internet stations internationally, Saturdays and Sundays. You can find all that information at danscottshow.org at the Affiliates and Archives page. We would encourage you to go there. You can also access previous interviews. You can find out more about Grand Slam Ministries, which the website grandslamministries.org is a page there. So just go check it out, danscottshow.org. My bio, whatever you need to know, is available at the website. Let's get into this. Unusual for us to have two guests in a program, but that's what we do today. Abby Johnson will be our opener. She, of course, used to run a Planned Parenthood facility and now is making it her life's mission to stamp out abortion and bring workers out of the abortion industry through her organization, And Then There Were None. And to date, they've brought almost 700 workers out. It is just an incredible story. As we always do with our guests, we begin with a bit of a life update and what they're doing now. And Abby, at the beginning, you'll hear, sounds a little bit overwhelmed.
Sure. Well, gosh, I'm a mom of eight, so it's always hopping, always busy, with the kids stuff and my husband, and that I try to make that a priority, so as much as I can. But ministry wise, we are busy as ever, praise God, and helping to get as many workers out of the abortion industry as we can and into a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. That's really what we're called to do and compelled to do. So we're doing that. And then I also run a hotline for women who are pregnant and in, that valley of decision, that moment of decision. And so working with them to choose life. And we also help single moms. So so it's just a busy time, busy time in the pro-life movement. I think there was kind of this thought by a lot of people that once Roe v. Wade was overturned, that our world was gonna get easier in the pro-life movement. But in fact, it has created more work and more work at the state level. And so we're working probably harder than we ever have.
Yeah, I have interviewed a couple of different people in the pro-life industry from a Christian standpoint, and they said the same thing, that when Roe v. Wade is overturned, in one sense, that's when the real work began, because now instead of, in effect, being attacked from one area, you're being attacked from many different areas because it's now in the hands of the states.
Right. And I feel like every week it's you're just kind of waiting for another state to drop something. Like today I woke up and saw Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled on abortion rights, and they're working to enshrine abortion in their constitution. And ensure that it is taxpayer funded. Every ballot initiative that has been put forward, trying to protect life has failed since Roe v. Wade has been overturned. So we're definitely fighting an uphill battle. But I've heard it said many times that after, great victory comes great loss. And I would say it's vice versa too. After great loss comes great victory. And so I think we're gonna have some tough hits. I think we're gonna have some tough losses, and I think we're seeing that. But at the end of the day, we don't do this work to win, right? We do it because it's what God compels us to do. We do it because it's the right thing to do. We do it because lives are on the line. So I'm not doing it to win a contest, right? I'm doing it because this is kingdom work. And as Christians, we are called to be about God's business.
You know what you said a moment ago about great victories being followed by great defeats, or high moments being followed by low moments. There's so many examples of that in the Bible. I think of the prophet Elijah, who had the great moment against the prophets of Baal on the mountaintop, and then the next thing you know, he's running for his life from Queen Jezebel, and he basically asked God to take him, just take me out of here. That's the Christian life. You're going from a valley to a mountaintop, and then back to a valley, and that's pretty much what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I would say there are some days where I'm like, Lord, like any day you want to come back, like any day you just want to shoot us right up there with you, that would be totally fine. But There's still a lot of work to be done. There are still a lot of souls that need to be saved. And that's our commitment to him, that we would keep working until the very end. And there's still a lot of work to do.
I know we don't have time to go into great detail about everything I'd love to talk about, but it's just intriguing to me that there was a time in your life that you were on the complete opposite side of this. And it's just another example of the redemptive grace and the massive transformation that people find through Christ. I can't imagine there's somebody out there who doesn't know your story, but you were at one time the director of a Planned Parenthood clinic, and we know what they are.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got involved in college, not really knowing anything about abortion or about the pro-life or pro-choice debate. And I grew up in a Christian home, but my parents were not, pro-life activists in any way, shape, or form. And I tell people it was, I think it was just kind of a different time too, because there was nobody standing up at a podium and, shouting their abortion, or, nobody was wearing a t-shirt back then that said, "I've had an abortion," right? People were not proud of their sin. It was a time where things were private and people still had a filter, right? Not everything that just came into the head came right out of the mouth. There was no internet. There was no social media. So I remember going to the voting booth with my parents when I was a little kid, and they would let me like punch in who they were voting for. And coming out of the voting booth, I remember my parents would always have this conversation with me, like, "Now, Abby, you cannot tell any of your friends who we voted for," as if there was any doubt that my parents, these strong conservative Christians, would have voted for anybody other than the conservative Republican candidate, right? But it was just a very private time. But we don't live in that anymore. And so I think my parents were just kind of like, "We've taught Abby the biblical pathway to marriage, and that's abstinence. And so she's going to follow that, and she's going to do everything we've told her to do. And so abortion's never going to be on the table. So we just don't need to talk about something so, disheartening and so difficult, with her." And so we just didn't talk about it. And so when I went to college, I was really ignorant and naive about those sorts of hard subjects and hard topics. And so I was very easily influenced by the other side. And that was essentially what happened. And I got involved and, believed their rhetoric, believed their narrative. Of course, I wanted to be a feminist. Of course, I wanted to stand up for women's rights, right? Of course, I wanted to help women, and got involved, got drug in, believed the lie. And, then all of a sudden, I've had my own two abortions, and I was just really drowning in this life of evil. And I've, cut myself off from the Lord. I didn't want to hear from him. Because I knew what he was going to be telling me. So I didn't want to hear from him. I knew what I was doing was wrong, because I worked at Planned Parenthood for a year and a half before I told my parents what I was doing. And so I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I was somehow just really trying to justify it in my mind, and was there for 8 years. And it took actually participating in a live ultrasound guided abortion, which that type of abortion had never taken place at my clinic where an ultrasound was actually used during the abortion procedure. And I was there to witness it. And I saw a 13-week-old baby fight and struggle for his life in the womb. And I knew then, looking at that, that there was life in the womb. There was humanity in the womb. I knew that I had really fooled myself for so long. And I knew I was on the wrong side of this debate. And so I ended up leaving.
Yeah, that was September 26th of 2009, and as I was doing some reading and research for the interview, I know there's obviously been some blowback. There are people who said that, well, we've searched the records for that day at that facility, and there's nothing that shows anything like that happened. But I can't fathom that you would be so very specific about the actual date that something like that happened if it didn't happen. I guess the blowback is not really a surprise, though.
No, you know, what was interesting actually was that when I first left, Planned Parenthood said, well, you know, my story first came out, their original release said, well, you know, we're, you know, yes, abortion is, it's, you know, difficult and it can be graphic. And, you know, we're sorry that, you know, Abby has left. Then when they realized kind of the extent of what was going on and that I was now really against abortion, right? That I was speaking up and saying, this is wrong. Like, what is happening is wrong. And we were misleading women. We were lying to them. Then all of a sudden, it was Abby was a terrible employee. You know, and we really didn't like her anyway. And we're glad she's gone. But they couldn't really say that because just months before, they had awarded me their Employee of the Year award. So they couldn't, that really didn't hold up because how could they say I was a terrible employee if they had just awarded me this huge award? So then they changed it. And then they said, well, you know, actually, the abortion didn't even, it never even happened. But, you know, we know that isn't true. We didn't even send in proper documentation to the state when we sent in state records. And so to say that, you know, Planned Parenthood is one of the shadiest organizations out there. So to believe that suddenly they're keeping fantastic documentation or anything like that is laughable. And I didn't leave until I left a week later. So what was really interesting was that I saw the documentation that they supposedly sent to this reporter, this liberal reporter that was feeling out my story. And what was really interesting was that the form that was sent into the state, I would have sent that in because I didn't leave for a week. So the abortion happened on a Saturday. I would have sent that record in that Monday to the state. But what they sent, the reporter, was signed by a different employee, not an employee that would have sent that form in. It would have been me. And so, of course, I told the reporter that. I said, this is not the accurate form. The form that was sent in would have been signed by me, the director. But, you know, they're not interested in the truth. These liberal reporters are not interested in the truth. They're interested in spinning Planned Parenthood's narrative and what they want the public
Well, and
to
Planned
know.
Parenthood even sued to try to put a gag order on you,
That's
and that
right.
didn't work. The
That's
judge
right.
threw
And
that
that's
out.
another thing. That's another thing that's interesting. And I've said that before. You know, if Planned Parenthood had any evidence that this abortion didn't occur, they would have brought that up when they sued me in court, because they had an ample opportunity to do that, because they took me to court to try to get a gag order against me because I know too much. I have handed out the checks to women that we harmed while making them sign a non-disclosure agreement that they'll never go to the media. I know all the things that took place. I know about all the malpractice. I know about all the failed inspection reports. I was in all the meetings, right? And so they tried to get a gag order to silence me. And if they had evidence that I was lying, that this never happened, this ultrasound never happened, you can bet your bottom dollar they would have brought that up when we were in court. But they never did. They never brought that up because they know that it did happen and they don't want anything in a court record proving that my story is true.
We are visiting with Abby Johnson. You may have seen the movie Unplanned about her life and her story. And she is the guest on this week's edition of the Dan Scott Show. I know you've only got 8 or 9 more minutes. How did you get reconciled with Jesus after all of this? How did you either establish for the first time or reestablish your faith in Christ?
Yeah, that was it was hard because I not only had killed two of my children by abortion, but I had participated in over 22,000 abortions in one way or another. Through talking to women who were going to have abortions, making their appointments, collecting their money. I mean, I had had a hand in that many abortions. And that was a big number. That was a huge amount of sin. And I just thought, how do I live with that? How can I live with that? And I mean, honestly, after I left, there were some days I didn't know if I wanted to. I just thought, I don't know that I can be forgiven for that much sin. And one day I was just in prayer and really struggling, and the Lord really showed me how prideful that was. That I was preventing reconciliation with Him, that I was preventing receiving forgiveness and receiving His mercy because of my own pride. Because I was basically saying to the Lord, you're not big enough. You're not great enough. You're not good enough to forgive what I've done. Your sacrifice on the cross was not good enough. It was not sufficient enough to forgive my sin. And I felt so ashamed because I thought, of course it was good enough. He gave up his life for me, for everyone, for everything I've done. And that was really a humbling moment, when the Lord showed me that. But I also felt like the Lord was showing me that He was going to make use of my past, and that, and I knew He didn't want to waste any of it. He did not want to waste any of my sin, that He wanted to use it all for His glory. And so I really just kind of stepped out in that. And, it took some practice, I would say, to wake up in the morning every day and to say, okay, am I going to live in my past, the place where Satan lives? I mean, that is his playground. Throwing up all the what ifs in my face and, reminding me of the things I've done, or am I going to live in the present, in this gift that God has given me? And am I going to use my past to tell his story, to tell the story about his mercy and his grace? And, eventually it just it wasn't even a choice anymore. Eventually, it just became so natural that I couldn't imagine living anywhere else but
Right.
with him.
The book that led to the movie Unplanned, same title, obviously. Was that a difficult book to write?
It was difficult. It was difficult to write, but it was also very healing for me because I just felt like I needed to get all of this stuff out and to get it on paper. It was actually much harder when the film came out. Because it's one thing to write it. It's quite another to have people see you in that sort of vulnerable state, right? And that was actually a lot harder. The first time I saw the rough cut of the film, the producers came to my house and showed it to me just like on our TV to me and my husband. And I was like, okay, And they left. And I looked at my husband and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I don't want it to come out. And my husband just looked at me and said, I think it's a little too late for that, you know? And, he just, and my husband just, he looked at me and he said, Abby, just remember, this isn't about you. This is about God. This is about him. And that was really the reminder that I needed. You know, it wasn't about me at all. The movie
Right.
could have been about, a fictional character named Alice Smith, right? It wasn't about Abby Johnson. It was about getting this story out and showing that conversion is possible and showing the reality of abortion, really pulling that curtain back on the abortion industry.
Final thing for you, and maybe we can do this again sometime and go a little more in
Sure.
depth on some things, but And Then There Were None is the organization that you've started, and I had Kelly Lester on a couple of weeks ago, and I think you're at almost 700 workers that you've brought out of the abortion industry now.
Yes,
I mean,
that's right.
that's got to be a, on one hand, a phenomenal feeling, but on the other hand, it's only a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It feels good. It feels really good because when we first started it, everybody kind of patted me on the head and said, that's such a cute idea, but it's never going to work. And these were people in the pro-life movement. I mean, these were, leaders in the pro-life movement that just really didn't believe that it was going to take off. And what was interesting is that they were saying that to me, like a former worker who came to the pro-life movement. And I'm
Right.
like, are you serious? Like, I did, And they were just kind of like, yeah, but you're different. And I was like, but I'm not different. I was a sinner in need of a savior. And I have to believe that there are many people like me in this industry who they just need a helping hand. They just need a hand reaching out to them saying, look, I've got you, right? Like, you can leave. We're going to help you. You don't have to stay. And so it really is an honor to work with these women and a few men who have left. And people ask me all the time, what's it like being on the phone with a worker when they are walking out of their clinic for the last time? And I say it's like listening to a miracle. It's like being a part of a miracle because it really is. It's like if you could hear a heart turning from a heart of stone into a heart of flesh, that's what you're listening to.
That's amazing. This whole thing is cast in the framework of being a war, and it is. But at the same time, I think we forget that as Christians, we're also supposed to show compassion. And I see we're doing this via Zoom for our listeners. You can't see her, but I can. But I see compassion in your eyes.
I hope so. I think that we are warring, right? But we're warring for people, for hearts. We're warring for eternal lives. And we're not going to win people's hearts with anger. And, you know, we're going to win them with love and with truth, but with compassion and with the characteristics that Jesus showed people. And he was a truth teller, right? And he spoke truth everywhere he went, but he also showed compassion when he needed to show compassion. And he was merciful when he needed to be merciful. But you know, when he needed to be a straight shooter, he was a straight shooter. When he needed to make people uncomfortable, he made people uncomfortable. But when it comes to eternal life, there's nothing more important than winning people into heaven.
Yeah.
And that's the goal, right? Is to make heaven crowded. And that's really what we're trying to do.
It's hard to have a better goal than that, isn't it? To make heaven crowded. I love the way that Abby ended our time together. That is Abby Johnson. Thank you so much for your time again. And I will just encourage you to continue to pray for her. And you can follow her on Facebook and on Twitter, or the artist formerly known as Twitter, now X, to keep up with what she's doing and her mission to continue to stamp out abortion and to bring workers out of the abortion industry. Quick break, and we'll come back and let you hear from Josh Holland on the other side.
Every day, there are children who leave school on Friday and eat little, and sometimes nothing, until they come back to school on Monday. It happens in every community, including yours. Many of these children live in circumstances that deprive them of basic needs necessary for a quality life. At Grand Slam Ministries, we want to change that. We want to invest in our children, giving them hope for the future. That investment includes necessities such as food, clothing, school supplies, and a safe environment to play, to study, to live. Please visit our website, grandslamministries.org. to find out more about our ministry and how you can help. We're just getting started. Will you come alongside us for the children's sake? Again, that's GrandSlamMinistries.org.
Dan Scott Show continues for this week. It's our 62nd episode presented by Grand Slam Ministries. I am Dan. Good to have you along, as always. As we get back to it, again, unusual that we have multiple guests in the same show. We normally like to go what I would consider long form, 35 or 40 minutes, and let that take up the vast majority of the show. Abby Johnson had a time constraint that limited her to about 25 minutes. But what it did, it opened the door for us to speak with our next guest. Josh Holland is the international director of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you're not familiar with that, you know perhaps about Samaritan's Purse and how they go into disaster-ridden areas with everything from food and other supplies to field hospitals, whatever they have to provide to help an area that has been hit by some kind of disaster. Well, sort of a partner organization or partner group within the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association is the Rapid Response Team. These are a group of chaplains who are deployed sometimes with Samaritan's Purse, oftentimes on their own to other places and other situations, to go in and offer counseling, support, hope, whatever the case may be. And Josh is the head of that organization for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. So thought it would be a good idea for you just to have a little bit of rapid response team 101 today, and Josh was very helpful in explaining who they are, what they do, and how they decide where to go. So here's our conversation with Josh Holland. I began just by asking him to introduce himself and tell us a bit about the job.
I appreciate it, Dan. Yeah, my name is Josh Holland, and I serve as the international director of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. We're a ministry that deploys chaplains all over the world to natural disasters and man-made disasters. We're blessed to provide training worldwide as well, equipping the body of Christ to understand grief and trauma, how to minister to people that are suffering. We call that training Sharing Hope in Crisis. We have a ministry to law enforcement as well, where we offer appreciation retreats, marriage retreats, and just honor and build up men and women who serve in law enforcement and their families also.
It's interesting, Josh, because I think most people know about the Billy Graham Crusades that were so famous and what he did for right around seven decades, traveling all over the world. And now Franklin and Will are continuing that tradition. But since really 9/11, the Rapid Response Team has been doing a reasonable amount of traveling to places all over the world, but with, I guess, a similar but a different mission. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that's right. And you mentioned September 11, 2001. So in the days following September 11th, Franklin Graham was in New York City with pastors and church leaders. It was when things were very much still in active search and rescue. People were holding signs of loved ones that they had not heard from yet, holding out hope that perhaps they were honestly still trapped in the rubble at that point. And so really, Franklin at that time just was overwhelmed with what was happening in New York and in our country after the terrorist attack. And that's really where the vision and the inception of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team came from. So we set up what was called the Billy Graham Prayer Center right downtown in downtown Manhattan, right across from Ground Zero, just to pray with people, minister to people. And since then, yes, we've had the opportunity to raise up an army, really, of chaplains around the world to respond at a moment's notice to disaster.
How did it get organized and grow out of that single incident that obviously caught the world's attention? And I'm guessing that was an indication that, hey, there's a need here that's not being met.
Yeah, absolutely. So in those early years, the first couple of years after 2001, after that incident, a big focus was on training. I mentioned Sharing Hope in Crisis. This is a training that's been developed and tweaked through the years. But basically, it's a biblical perspective on grief, trauma. We do teach the clinical side of it as well, but really to equip believers to understand grief and trauma, crisis, suffering, a biblical perspective of suffering, why God allows suffering, and really how we can process that in our own life and how we can share that hope with other people. And I don't know if you or any of your listeners might be able to relate to this, but I kind of laugh when I say it sometimes, but sometimes church people or Christians are worse than non-Christians about just saying the wrong thing to somebody that's going through a difficult time. We're so quick to just maybe spout out a Bible verse or to say, you know, just trust the Lord, or the joy of the Lord's your strength. Well, that's all good and true, but sometimes our timing is off, the way we say things off. So we teach people through this training on what to say, what not to say, very practically, just how to minister to people in our lives that are going through trauma. And trauma doesn't have to just be, you know, a 9/11 type of event or a hurricane that destroys a community. It can be a divorce or a bad medical report or a death of a loved one or, you know, some tragic situation in life that we all go through and all will go through and all know somebody that's going through. So yeah, in those early years, it was training, and then it developed more into really raising up chaplains to respond and deploy. Of course, we deploy alongside Samaritan's Purse, mm-hmm. which is our sister organization that Franklin Graham also oversees. And so on natural disasters, Samaritan's Purse is going to send out volunteers to help with cleanup and repair. And then while they're doing that hands and feet, if you will, type of ministry, our chaplains come alongside just to listen to people, pray with people, talk with people, share God's love with people. And everywhere we go, we're so blessed to see people come to Christ in some tragic situations.
Would it be accurate to say that you hear the question, why would a loving God allow something like this to happen just about every time you go somewhere?
If not worded exactly like that, then yes, the essence of that question we certainly hear. And something that one of my mentors said, and that I've used as well is, just being honest and saying, I don't know, but one thing you said is true. There is a loving God. And then allowing people to understand the love of God by sending his son Jesus. And it's an amazing thing. I mean, we've all kind of experienced this maybe in some way, but sometimes it takes being at a very low point in life for people to recognize their need for God and the love of God. And we certainly don't take advantage of people's sufferings to just have them repeat a sinner's prayer, but we are the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. And kind of like you alluded to, this ministry is really the same thing that Dr. Billy Graham started all those years ago. He was preaching in the stadiums of the world and the arenas of the world to multiply millions of people throughout his ministry, hundreds of millions. But we're doing the same thing one-on-one. It's the same message, but it's instead of in a pulpit, it's a chaplain just one-on-one listening to someone maybe on their worst day and then sharing that there is a God even in this fallen world where we suffer. There's a God that loves us. Heaven's our home if we receive the free gift of God and Jesus. So it's a beautiful ministry, even though we're in very tragic situations and it's a tough ministry in many ways. We see the Lord just do beautiful things.
I was going to say that in one sense, you have an advantage that Dr. Graham didn't have because, for the most part, he was not able in those huge crusade settings to do very much of what you would call one-on-one ministry. Now, we know the effect he had on millions and millions and millions of people with his preaching, but the rapid response team gets to really get down where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. And you're dealing with people on that one-on-one basis, and it allows you a connection in a sense that he wasn't able to have just because of the type of work he was doing with the Crusades.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right.
We're visiting with Josh Holland, the international director of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. You know, the gospel, the Great Commission says we're to go and share the gospel. And much in the same way, the Rapid Response Team, that's what you do. You go. 43 deployments in 2023. I think the numbers that I saw were over 800 disaster sites across the globe since 2002. How many chaplains do you have? Not right now, trained on standby, ready to go at a moment's notice.
Yeah, well, we have a couple thousand, right around 2,000 volunteer chaplains just in the United States. And we have several hundred more chaplains in different countries around the world. We have a group of chaplains, close to 100, I think, in Ukraine, actually, since the war started a couple years ago, ministering all over that country. And so, different chaplains are in different seasons in life, and some may not have the readiness and availability that others do, but we're so blessed every time something happens and we send out a message, there's always chaplains that are ready to go that day, right away, and to be there as soon as possible to provide support.
In the world we live in today, we know that the anti-Christian culture, the anti-Jesus culture, is getting stronger and stronger. And that's really no surprise. The Bible told us that's what was going to happen as we move forward in time. What kind of opposition, or do you ever come across any opposition when you deploy and go to some of these places?
We have experienced some opposition. I mean, wherever there's a crisis, we assess, and if there's a connection. We're blessed to have local church connections all over the world. And so, for example, when horrific events such as mass shootings have happened, there was one, I think, back in 2016 in Orlando, Florida, in a nightclub called the Pulse Nightclub, which was primarily known to be a homosexual nightclub. But local churches there with the heart for that community, you know, devastated over what happened, invited our chaplains to come and just provide some sort of ministry of presence as people came to the memorial site and grieved, bringing flowers and this kind of thing. We had the same thing happen maybe a year or two ago in Colorado, where another shooting at a gay bar, I think it was, if I'm getting my facts correct, but it was, it's something where we've been invited, where we're going to go, we're going to love everybody, we're going to tell everybody God loves you, and with no agenda whatsoever than the love of God. But yeah, there's been people that have protested that a bit, you know, thinking that people with maybe our theological conviction about marriage or something shouldn't be there. And we just say, look, we're not here to debate about that. We're just here when a community's in crisis to love people, to share the love of Jesus with people, which is exactly what we do. And even there, we've seen many people in the homosexual community or LGBT community have an opportunity for our chaplains to minister to them, love them, pray with them. And so it's just, it's a wonderful ministry that God has allowed us to just to take all over the world. Again, we don't charge in and just go like we're the experts. We're never going to go unless there's a church really that's invited us, or a law enforcement department, for example, that's invited us after maybe a line of duty death. You know, there's many great communities that have their own chaplains, and we've assessed and offered support, but there's many times a disaster happens and the door just doesn't open. But when it does, and when there's a request, we're always ready to send chaplains just to go and share God's love.
Yeah, the timing of our doing the interview is pretty good. Well, I don't know if good's the right word considering, but just from the standpoint that as we're doing this, you have just deployed some chaplains to minister to people who've been affected by the wildfires in Texas. And unfortunately, there's never a shortage of opportunities to go. But the work that you're doing, opposition aside, I would imagine it's like almost any mission trip. My wife has been on several mission trips. I've been fortunate to go on one with her. You go with the intention of maybe being a blessing and usually come away more blessed by what you see and how the people respond to what God is doing in that area.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I mean, as Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And I feel that way, I think, every time I get back from a deployment, that I was really the one that was blessed. And it's just a privilege to serve in these situations.
Tell me, before we wrap it up, just a little bit more about the law enforcement ministry side, because we know that the men and women who serve our country in law enforcement face trauma of their own on a daily basis. And as you referenced a moment ago, I think it's not just dealing with that trauma, but it's relationships and everything that goes into it.
Yeah, well, law enforcement, I have my younger brother's a police officer here in Charlotte. Just in my conversations with him, knowing how that profession has been stressful on him and his family, but it's a calling. And I think several years ago, during the time when there was these loud cries to defund the police, Franklin Graham just felt called that, you know, we need to defend the great men and women that serve and lay down their lives to protect us on a daily basis. And so for a number of years, we've been doing a retreat at the Billy Graham Training Center, the Cove in Asheville, for law enforcement officers and their spouses. But in the last few years, I think since about 2020 or so, when the defund the police really, maybe 2021, when that really became a thing, we've gone now and are taking this ministry outside of just Asheville, but going to places like Chicago and Seattle, Washington, and Southern California, places that are very difficult, even maybe it's difficult anywhere to be a law enforcement officer, but some of these communities where it's even more difficult, we're taking these retreats. We have a ministry center in Alaska, just a beautiful wilderness type of camp in the state of Alaska, where each summer we send a small group of people that were men and women who were injured actually in the line of duty, for like a marriage retreat, enjoying the Alaskan wilderness, but then pouring into them, their marriages. We see a lot of them actually come to Christ, and get baptized in a lake up there in Alaska that's very cold. And but it's incredible ministry that God has allowed us to be involved with, just to honor and bless and encourage those that serve in law enforcement. And many of our chaplains, several hundred of our volunteer chaplains, have a law enforcement background. And so when those tragic events where like an officer dies in the line of duty, many times the door will open to just send several of those law enforcement chaplains we have just to support the department, the community. And we've had several of those recently. In fact, just today we're wrapping up one in Burnsville, Minnesota. We had one last week in Las Cruces, New Mexico, one in Tennessee just a few weeks ago. It's unfortunate that we're responding to more and more of those type of disasters as well.
Just a couple of minutes left, and we'll let you go. Josh Holland is with us, the International Director of the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. When you go into situations time and time and time again, even going as God's representative, it's got to have some effect on you. Do you find that from time to time you have to minister to the chaplains who are being deployed into these places?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. There's a clinical term called secondhand grief or secondhand trauma, where someone who secondhand, they're not in the middle of it, but they're around it nonstop and they're taking on other people's burdens and long days as our chaplains are out hearing story after story of loss and pain and grief and heartache. Yeah, it can definitely wear on chaplains. We do typically rotate teams of chaplains in every week. So even a deployment that might go several months, like after a hurricane or something, every week we send in a new group of chaplains because 7 days of that type of ministry is really a lot. It's very taxing, tiring. It's blessed, like you said, it's a blessing to do it. But after 7 days of that, it's usually time for a new team to come in. And so, yes, we do have a team of folks within our ministry that are really skilled in debriefing. And we, on especially traumatic deployments, we're even more intentional to try to make sure our chaplains get a chance to process and talk through what they've experienced, you know, so they're not harboring, you know, this secondhand, if you will, grief. And that's a very real thing. And it's something we want to continue to strive to get better at, is taking care of our own chaplains after they serve.
As we wrap it up, what else do our listeners need to know about the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team?
Well, I would just encourage anybody listening to please pray for this ministry. It's a huge blessing and a privilege to be able to do this type of work. But please just keep us in your prayers as we go. Just if there is a listener that would like to learn more, I'd encourage you to check out our website, billygraham.org/RRT, to find out more information, stories of God at work, that kind of thing. But no, it's just been a blessing, Dan, to talk to you, and just appreciate you helping some of your listeners learn a little bit more about what we do. And we sure do covet your prayers and support.
Thank you, Josh Holland. And that is all the time we have for this week's program. Worked out pretty well, I think. Our thanks to Abby Johnson, to Josh, and to all of you, as always, for listening. Until next week, I'm Dan Scott, saying God bless you, and so long, everybody.